Republican State Senator Sam McCann is running for governor as a third-party candidate. He says our current governor, Republican Bruce Rauner, hasn't stood up for conservatives.
We are in this to give conservatives a place to cast their vote. I'm the only pro-life candidate running for governor.
Plus, immigration is a divisive issue across the country, including here in Illinois. Here's Governor Rauner and J.B. Pritzker at a debate hosted by the Chicago Sun-Times.
He has said there's no such thing as illegal, and he wants more sanctuary cities in Illinois. I am against sanctuary.
People are not illegal. People are not illegal.
We'll dig into where the Illinois candidates stand on this issue and what state and local officers can actually do about it. Also, our current state attorney general, Lisa Madigan, isn't running for re-election. Today, we'll hear from the Democrat and Republican nominees who are hoping to replace her. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay with us. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Later this hour, you'll hear our interviews with candidates for attorney general. We'll also continue our series on issues that matter to you before you head into the voting booth. Today, how statewide candidates are talking about immigration. But first, we've been airing our interview with candidates for governor. You can see the ones we've aired so far, J.B. Pritzker and Cash Jackson at 21stshow.org's website. Governor Rauner's campaign staff did not respond to repeated invitations to be interviewed. Today, we're speaking with Sam McCann. He's a state senator who represents Illinois' 50th district. It stretches from the area just west of Springfield all the way to the Missouri border and just north of St. Louis. And he's running for governor as a member of the Conservative Party. Senator McCann, welcome back to the 21st.
Thank you, Nyla. Thank you for having me.
So, Senator, I think voters who haven't been following the election closely or maybe who are just now starting to look might be surprised to see a candidate running as a member of the Conservative Party. Because it's not something I think most folks in Illinois are familiar with. What is the Conservative Party? How is it different from others?
Well, if you were to look at the Conservative Party's platform, it would essentially be a copy and paste of the Republican platform. The Republican platform is a beautiful thing. The problem is with the Republican Party is that they've allowed a stranger in their house, and that stranger has brought other strangers with him. And these people are not Republicans, they're not conservatives, and they totally ignore and are trying to change the Republican Party's platform. So the Conservative Party of Illinois, if you copied and pasted the Republican Party's platform, that would be our platform. The difference is we know what's in it, we're proud of it, we adhere to it, and we are loud and proud about it. And so we are really, I believe, the only conservative voice, the only conservative place for conservatives to cast their vote in this election.
And I do want to get through some of those platform pieces and go through that with you. But I wanted to ask you about an editorial that just came out from the Chicago Tribune editorial board. And they say you're on the ballot for just one reason, and that's actually to help Democrats. Would you like to respond to that?
Yeah, the Chicago Tribune is a bunch of liars. Just like the liar they work for, they're trying their best to get Bruce Rauner reelected. They worked hard to get him elected 4 years ago. He's proven that he's a liar. He lied to the faces of every Illinois voter 4 years ago when he said, I'm a very socially progressive liberal person, but I won't enact my socially liberal progressive agenda on the people of Illinois. I just want to focus on taxes and our economy. And here we are 4 years later, and our tax situation is worse off. Our economy is worse off. And the only thing that he's done is proven that he's the most socially progressive liberal governor the state of Illinois has ever had. He makes Pat Quinn look like a conservative. The Chicago Tribune is just like every other news outlet. They're owned by an ownership group. They're not in this as a public service. This is an editorial. It's not news. This editorial is a lie. We are in this to give conservatives a place to cast their vote. I'm the only pro-life candidate running for governor. If you're a conservative in the state of Illinois, you only have one choice. That choice is the McCann Marine campaign. And we're proud to offer that choice to the people of Illinois. They wouldn't have anyone pro-life or conservative to vote for if we weren't in this race. So the Chicago Tribune editorial board is nothing more than a bunch of liars spreading a pack of lies.
I wonder if we could get into some of your platform, and we can start with taxes. If we think about Illinois' state income tax rate, it's a 4.95% for everyone. Is that the correct tax rate, you think, for people in Illinois right now?
And first of all, and I also would like to point out that that is much higher than it was when Bruce Rauner took office. When he took office, it was substantially lower, so he's personally overseen that. That being said, I think before we talk about taxes, we should talk about spending. And here in the state of Illinois, we use I've not served on a budget committee. So the budget committees in the legislature, as well as I think the governor's office, his Office of Management and Budget, uses a technique for budgeting where they look at last year's number and then they add a multiplier. They say, this is what we spent last year, so we need to spend this much and a little bit more this year. That's what's gotten us into the trouble we're in. I want to bring about a paradigm shift when it comes to the way we budget. That shift would occur using zero-based budgeting. So in other words, instead of looking at last year's number, we would start with zero, which is the way most people run their households and run their small businesses. So we would start at zero, and we would make every single department head verify and legitimize every single dollar they're requesting. And so I think if we use that technique, we might discover that we don't need as much money. But see, that's not how it's done in Illinois. So if we say that taxes equal income, let's look at the other side of the balance sheet, and that is expenses. Until we get a handle on what our expenses really are, I don't know that anyone in state government even knows how much we really need. So I want to focus on the expense side of the ledger, and then we'll talk about how much we need to spend.
Where else do you see cutting in public spending to make up for this difference? Are there specific expenses?
We have to have entitlement reform. 3 out of 4 children are born in the state of Illinois today are paid for by Medicaid. Now, I believe in the social safety net. I believe in it so much that I'm prepared to have these tough conversations. These are not conversations that Bruce Rauner or the Republicans are bringing forth. This is a conversation that conservatives want to have, and this conservative candidate for governor is bringing it forth. It's not sustainable. We cannot live in a society where our single largest line item is Medicaid, health care for the poor. It needs to be a social safety net that acts more as a trampoline to softly receive you and bounce you back out into society, not a place that you go, not a hammock where you rest for the rest of your life or where generations of families rest. It has to be there for when people need it, but it's being abused. It's rife with fraud and abuse, and we have to undertake reform of our welfare system.
So, how would you reform the Medicaid system?
First of all, I would say we have to introduce a welfare to work program. You know, the last fellow who had great success with a welfare to work program was a fellow you may have heard of by the name of Bill Clinton, President of the United States, a Democrat. He actually worked with a Republican Congress to introduce a welfare to work system that was rolled back under George Bush II and Barack Obama. We need to work on that here in the state of Illinois. I also believe that we need to verify that people aren't using illegal drugs. We need to test for drug use. If you're taking drugs, you shouldn't be able to be on the public dole. I have too many constituents who come to me and say, my job requires me to pass a drug test. I don't understand why I have to pay taxes for people to be on the dole for the rest of their lives if they so choose, and they don't have to be held to the same scrutiny.
And so when you think about Medicaid, I just want to ask you about that in terms of oftentimes it is referred to as something that helps the working poor. There are people who are working, maybe not at levels that it sounds like you would like to see. I also wonder about the children on that. So how would that work?
Well, I think federal law precludes us, and also I think morality precludes us from withholding services to the poor. Also, federal law precludes us from withholding any services to anyone who is in an emergent situation. So let's be clear here. What we're talking about is systemic generational welfare. That's one of the things that's killing this country and it's killing this state. And actually, quite frankly, because we are a sanctuary state, thanks to Bruce Rauner and the Democratic legislature. He's the one that's in this with Madigan, not me, in case you're not. If you want to follow the bouncing ball, Bruce Rauner is the one who's worked with Mike Madigan to make this the most liberal, progressive state in the union right now. So if we look at what we need to do, we need to bring these reforms that other states have had success with. We would obviously never withhold services from someone who was in an emergent situation, from a child. That would be immoral, and we wouldn't do it. But we do have to get a handle on this generational systemic abuse of our systems, of the welfare system. We all know what's going on, but nobody wants to talk about it. We have to have this conversation.
My guest is State Senator Sam McCann, who is running for governor as the Conservative Party nominee. Senator McCann, we've talked about what spending you would cut. I just want to go back to the state income tax question and just ask what you think the tax rate should be at, because you noted that Governor Rauner had raised it in his tenure. What do you think is an appropriate level?
So first of all, I think you have to remember that the governor gets something called the Governor's Office of Management and Budget, referred to as GOMBI under the dome. There you get several dozen people who make good salaries, who are economists and professional budgeters. I don't have those folks at my disposal right now. I will as governor, and I will work with them to as well as with the 41 department heads that I will appoint. I will work with them to introduce a balanced budget, and I believe a budget that we can actually have a surplus under and start paying down past due bills. I believe that the government should be as big as it needs to be and not 1 pound heavier. And so until we understand how much it actually costs to deliver government, I think we're getting the cart before the horse when we start talking about how much the tax rate should be. So I don't believe the tax rate should be any higher than it is, and I believe the tax rate should be closer to the 3% that it was before the Democrats passed it, 8 or 9 years ago. But again, until I'm there with my own office of the Governor's Office of Management and Budget, it's going to be difficult to know exactly what that number is. But I want to concentrate on expenses and let that drive the income side of the balance sheet instead of talking about how much we can fleece the people out of and then how much we can run off and spend.
I want to ask you about immigration since you've referenced it a couple of times. Do you think that state resources should be used to help enforce federal immigration law when it comes to detention and deportation?
I certainly do. I most certainly do. If you don't have a strong border, you don't have a strong country. If you don't have a strong border, you don't have a strong state. We are going through – I just came from FedEx. I had to show my ID to send to FedEx. Why do you think that is? That's because we live in a country where they don't even know if you're here legally or not and where to find you if something were to turn up in that FedEx. This is ridiculous. We're penalizing the citizens of our state and the citizens of our country because the politicians don't have enough backbone to enforce the laws that are on the books.
Can I ask you about public education? And we think about the way that the state has historically funded public schools up until this year in a really unequal way. The state also relies pretty heavily on using property taxes to fund schools. Do you think it's time to stop doing that? How to funding public schools with local property taxes?
I do think that if we're going to substantially reduce the property tax burden, because as you've almost pointed out, the property taxes don't go to the state. So many citizens out there believe that when they pay their property taxes, a portion of it goes to state government. And as you know, I'm sure you're well aware, it doesn't. But until we start paying for public schools substantially through at the state level, it's going to be difficult to make a substantial cut in property taxes. I think that's going to be a conversation that I look forward to leading and having with the General Assembly.
Wanted to ask you about Illinois' pension situation. When we think about the hundreds of billions of dollars in pension debt that the state faces, owing a lot of money to retirees, there have been certain fixes, particularly, you know, in your term in the legislature, different attempts that have been made that have been found unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. How would you go about approaching our pension crisis?
Yes, ma'am. So, first of all, the people who have paid into these systems over the years, the workers, the annuitants, they have paid every dime they were ever supposed to pay. They have done their jobs faithfully. They've done everything they're supposed to do. The politicians robbed them. They robbed the pension system. If this would have happened in the private sector, these politicians would have gone to prison. But because it's Illinois and it's politics, these same politicians turn into career politicians who get their own pension for the rest of their lives. It's immoral. So I've always stood with the state workers. I've always stood with all working people, whether you're union or non-union, public or private, blue collar or white collar. I'm for working people. There's only one way to morally and constitutionally fix the pension system, and that is to reamortize the debt. The 1995 pension ramp that we're under right now that says that it has to be 100% funded by 2045. First of all, it was a failure to begin with. The politicians who were in power at the time came up, they devised a plan that gave them very, very low payments until they basically moved on from their political careers and set us up for this failure. To make matters worse, future general assemblies and governors decided to rob from the pension system again, not make payments, or to borrow with backloaded bonds to make payments, which adds to the unfunded liability. The only way we can fix this is to turn this into a true ramp, to pick a date in the future. And I would work with the annuitants. I would work with labor. I would work with the General Assembly. I would work with the funds managers. I would work with everyone at the table to establish a date in the future, whether it's 2055, 2065, 2075. We would ascertain that date. And then we would declare it a true ramp, a true incline. And I think by extending the horizontal axis, extending that horizontal axis, we would lower the inclination of that ramp and turn it into a true ramp that would free up funds. Currently, it would free up cash today and tomorrow and ensuing years. It would get what we have to pay right now under that old ramp system that was flawed to begin with. It would bring that down. It would allow less pressure on the current budget situation and give us money to also pay towards past due bills.
We just have less than a minute left. I just want to ask you one last question about one of the jobs of the governor is to be a cheerleader for Illinois. And how would you sell Illinois to potential residents and companies?
Illinois is the crossroads of the industrialized Western Hemisphere. Think about that. We are the crossroads of one half of one side of the planet. We have the best people on earth. They're highly educated. They are capable. They are hardworking. We have farmland. We have railroads. We have waterways. We have interstates. We have higher education. We have it all. There's nobody positioned stronger and better than the state of Illinois, and I will be loud and proud about that, and I look forward to leading Illinois into a bright future.
Senator Sam McCann is a state senator who is running for governor as the Conservative Party nominee. Senator McCann, thanks for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you, Niall. I appreciate the opportunity as always.
The 21st is made possible in part by Krannert Art Museum at the University of Illinois, presenting the Art and Design Faculty Exhibition on view November 1st through December 8th. More information is available at kam.illinois.com. .edu.
Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. For more than a decade, leaders in Washington have called for an overhaul of the U.S. immigration system, but they've never been able to agree on what the best way forward is. Everything from the DREAM Act, originally proposed by Illinois Senator Dick Durbin, to a bipartisan Senate bill in 2013. None of these ideas have ever completely materialized. Since Donald Trump took office, immigration has become an even more divisive issue. Families have been separated at the southern border. Federal authorities have continued to detain and deport immigrants living in the country illegally. And a reminder, if you remember, the government was shut down for 2 days over the future of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, which President Trump tried to end but currently is in place now. Even this morning, we've been hearing news reports of President Trump saying he would like to end birthright citizenship via an executive order. All this week, we're diving into the biggest issues in the midterm elections this morning. As we talk about immigration, I'm joined by Melissa Sanchez, a reporter for ProPublica Illinois. Elizabeth Romph Bruin is an immigration attorney at Delgado Romph Bruin in Chicago. She's also secretary of the Chicago chapter of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. Ladies, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Elizabeth, I just wanted to start by asking, you've been practicing immigration law since 2004. Before we talk about where statewide candidates stand on these issues, I wonder how much has changed for you and your clients since January 2017 when President Trump took office.
Well, I think that, as always, immigration law is fast-paced and changing, but I think that some of the policy shifts have been very dramatic since that time. And I think some of the attitudes that have been expressed have been very difficult for many of the clients that we serve. So the level of anxiety, I think, is higher than I have experienced earlier in my practice.
Melissa, I wanted to ask you about that because I know there are a lot of complex policies around immigration, and we're going to get to some of that in a minute. But I wonder how much of this is, to Elizabeth's point, about fear, especially among immigrants, regardless of whether or not they're here legally or not.
I think she's totally right. I mean, even in my own family, which is, there's a lot of documented immigrants, there's anxiety about this administration. People I know who are undocumented in the city of Chicago tell me that they've stopped, for example, getting food stamps for their kids because they're afraid of being on the rolls and getting caught at some point and getting deported. So I think it's really real. And then with all of these crazy shootings happening in different parts of the country, with this rise in the white supremacist movement, I think that kind of compounds the fears more, gets exacerbated, and there's like an actual visceral fear of like violence, maybe not directly from the administration, but from some people, you know, who we've seen just commit pretty terrible things recently.
Mm-hmm. Melissa, yesterday when we talked about healthcare, we broke down areas where the state has power to do something versus the federal government. And what does that look like when it comes to immigration? What ability do states have to enforce or create policy versus the federal government?
It's kind of limited what the state can do in a way. So I think I've been thinking about this a lot. One of the big things that Illinois can do, or Chicago can do, or you know, different localities can do, is in a way symbolic. It's to say to the federal government, we won't directly cooperate with you on immigration enforcement. So that's where you have kind of this rise in like sanctuary cities or sanctuary states. In Illinois, the governor approved a legislation last year known as the Trust Act that did some limiting of interactions between local law enforcement and immigration, federal immigration authorities. But that's limited, I say, because the federal government can still do whatever it wants. It can still arrest people, you know, in a sanctuary city, in a public space or in a gas station, and detain them for immigration reasons. So it's sort of like a public stance that a state can take to say that we're friendly to immigrants and we won't go out of our way to help the federal government with deportation proceedings, but the federal government can still come in and do its work around local authorities, and that includes like showing up at courthouses and looking at dockets and looking for folks who might think are undocumented.
Okay. You mentioned the Trust Act, and I wanted to play a little piece of audio. This is from a recent gubernatorial debate that was held by the Chicago Sun-Times. And it's actually both Governor Rauner and his Democratic opponent, J.B. Pritzker, both of them arguing about immigration.
And he has said there is no such thing as an illegal person. He has said there's no such thing as illegal, and he wants more sanctuary cities in Illinois. I am against sanctuary.
People are not illegal. People are not illegal. There are undocumented immigrants, but people are not illegal.
People can be here illegally, and they are, and they shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Pritzker is against American workers when he supports sanctuaries and says no one is here illegally.
Mr. Pritzker, what's your response?
Where do immigrants fit into the Illinois economy, including undocumented immigrants?
Governor Rauner, of course, is trying to mask his own position. He and I agree about the Trust Act. He signed the Trust Act. Yeah. I agree we need a Trust Act in the state.
Which law enforcement asked me to sign.
And let me also say, stop interrupting.
You can't interrupt
let
them.
Me please answer the question. We need comprehensive immigration reform at the federal level, and you should have a governor who's standing up and advocating for that. But we also need to stand up for immigrants who are here in the state of Illinois. They are good for the economy of the state of
Illinois. Illegal immigrants are not.
Okay, there's a lot in there. That's J.B. Pritzker, the voice we heard, well, right at the end, that illegal immigrants are not. That was Governor Rauner. They were talking about a lot of different things in there. I wanted to just start, though, with this whole idea of a sanctuary city, because I think we keep hearing this over and over. If people are paying attention to campaign ads, this is one of the terms that has been thrown around quite a bit. Elizabeth, can I just first ask you, is there a clear definition of what a sanctuary city actually is?
Well, I think each ordinance that's passed has different language, but the theme that runs through them is that it's a separation of federal enforcement from local benefits. So, for example, in Chicago, an undocumented immigrant could walk into the Chicago Police Department and not be asked their immigration status because it's irrelevant to reporting the crime committed against them. That's just one example. But it's not just the police and law enforcement. It's other city benefits that people might try to access. But if they're not in a sanctuary city or if they're not in a place that has a stated policy that says that undocumented immigrants can access these benefits without fear, then they may be less inclined to seek those benefits. So practically speaking, while I certainly agree with what Melissa said about it being a public stance and support, it's also practically speaking, it does allow for more people, I think, to access benefits that citizens of the city are able to have.
That's Chicago immigration attorney Elizabeth Romp Bruin. We're also speaking with ProPublica Illinois reporter Melissa Sanchez. Melissa, there's this issue also that both Governor Rauner and J.B. Pritzker raised of just the language around this and saying the term, quote unquote, illegals. And Governor Rauner was saying that J.B. Pritzker believes there's no such thing as an illegal person. And then you hear J.B. Pritzker respond by saying people are not illegal. There are undocumented immigrants, but people are not illegal. I wonder what that difference in wording says about the two men and their stances on this issue.
Yeah, it's funny that this is still an issue. I remember thinking about this like when I was 16, and it's just that one of those things that doesn't go away. I think the heart of it is this idea of giving humanity to people as immigrants, that they're not, to describe somebody as an illegal, as a noun, sort of refers to an action they may have taken to cross a border, enter a country without the right documentation or visa status or whatever. So there's been this like shift with immigration advocates over the past 15 or 20 years to move away from that language. So what does it say about Rauner and Pritzker? I think Rauner is struggling to connect more closely with folks who really care or who really believe what Trump is saying in Illinois. And because this has become such a hot button issue nationally, and Trump uses language like illegals, we got to get rid of the rapists, we got to get rid of all of this stuff we've heard. Rauner needs to figure out a way to maybe go along with what Trump is saying or sound like he's also talking about the same people, and the right sees the use of the word undocumented as being too sympathetic or being an excuse for immigrants who don't have status legally here.
Elizabeth, we're at the point now with immigration where even our language we can't agree on. Is that where it seems like we're at?
Well, I agree. I think it also contributes to this idea of us versus them. It isolates people when you use language that is charged. People do tend to become more polarized. And I think that, similar to the statements that were made in that clip about economic contributions, to say that undocumented make no economic contributions to Illinois is an extreme statement. There's a much more moderate position that would still support some of the goals expressed by the Republicans and the Trump administration.
And to that point, I wanted to what you were just saying, Elizabeth, I wanted to address another claim that Governor Rauner has made. This is also from that Sun-Times debate, and this is mirrors a claim that many Republicans have made in this campaign year about immigrants.
One of the reasons we have such high unemployment in the city of Chicago and so much crime is the massive number of illegal immigrants here take jobs away from American citizens and Chicago citizens.
Okay, so you're blaming the violence in Chicago on illegal immigrants?
I'm saying that the unemployment is higher and wages are lower because we have so much illegal immigration.
That's Governor Rauner from a Chicago Sun-Times debate recently. Melissa, what do we know about the link factually, if there is a link between immigration and crime or immigration and unemployment?
Yeah, that's been studied a lot by economists on multiple occasions, and the conclusions are mixed, and I think for the most part, they might show that immigrants contribute a little bit more than they take away. I think the big question, what Ron refers to, is the depressing of other wages. I don't think that's been a significant factor. I don't think that's actually what's happened. The data doesn't back what Ron.
And what about
saying.
The crime rate in Chicago?
I think that's similar. And that he took some more heat for that statement. There's no evidence that's true. That's not factually true.
That's Melissa Sanchez, who we've been speaking with from ProPublica, Illinois. Elizabeth Romfruin is also with us. She's an immigration lawyer in Chicago. She's also the secretary of the Chicago chapter of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. And I wanted to move on to asking you guys about several immigration reform bills that the House voted on this year. The most recent one included a path to legal status for recipients of DACA. That's the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program, along with cuts to family-based migration and funding for a border wall. That bill failed, even though Republicans hold a majority in the House and the Senate. Melissa, when we're looking at nationally, what does it say about where the Republican Party is on immigration when we're thinking about comprehensive immigration reform?
I think we just haven't made a whole lot of progress since the late 80s on this at all. I think the DACA issue, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, that's the one place where you do have conservatives, including folks, Republicans here from Illinois, who do want to do something to help this group of sympathetic young people who basically grew up in this country.
But I should write, and I should add, sorry to interrupt you, Melissa, but I just wanted to add, I know for folks who are paying attention to the 13th Congressional District, I know Congressman Ronnie Davis is a Republican, and he did vote for those bills. Sorry, keep going.
Exactly. So it makes it complicated, and then you have... and then when you have a gigantic proposal to do away with DACA or to do something with child separation at the border, with family separation at the border or the wall, it's really hard to get agreement on all of these things at once. So I think the best that they can do at the moment is maybe piecemeal, because there's very few places where both sides can agree on.
Elizabeth, when we're thinking about all of these attempts to overhaul the system and we're hearing all these buzzwords thrown around, everything from the border wall to DACA, even this morning now, where this whole issue of birthright citizenship, which has now suddenly been raised. Are there crucial parts of a federal overhaul of our immigration system that you think voters across the political spectrum need to be thinking about?
Well, I think when I think about immigration, and I think this is part of what makes it a complicated issue, I think about sort of what are our basic values that we're trying to organize these policies and laws around. So that's first, what type of country do we want to be? And then second, practically speaking, what makes sense? What can we afford to do? What's a good use of our resources? And I think that moderating some of these policies would be very useful. So I would never say, although I've been an advocate of immigrants for 20 years now, I would never say we don't need border security. But what type of border security? Do we want a wall that's very expensive, or do we want to utilize technology and personnel that may be better equipped to do what we need done? And when we look at values, what type of country do we want to be? Do we want to be a country that has policies that will protect those that need protection from whatever is happening in their countries of origin? How do we want to organize our response to those crises?
Yeah, and as we think about that, as we're talking about, in some cases, a lack of specifics, I guess as we listen to the candidates, maybe it's parsing that and parsing what their values are and if you agree with them, because I think there are very different values that are being presented here. I want to thank Elizabeth Romfruin. She's an immigration attorney at Delgado Romfruin in downtown Chicago. I want to thank Melissa Sanchez as well. She's a reporter with ProPublica, Illinois. We didn't get to some of the reporting that Melissa has done actually on the Chicago area detention facilities that children have been sent to. We will tweet out some of the links to that if you're interested in that. That was one topic we didn't get to today. Again, all of our election coverage is at our website, 21stshow.org. We've got voter guides there. We're compiling all of our candidate interviews and these topics we're covering. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about the economy. Melissa, Elizabeth, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for doing this.
And coming up, we're continuing our candidate interviews. We'll be hearing from the Democratic and Republican candidates for Attorney General. Thanks for listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The Illinois Attorney General is the state's chief legal officer. And for more than 15 years, that office has been held by Lisa Madigan. But this time around, she's not running for another term. For the next 10 minutes, you'll hear from the Democratic and Republican candidates who are hoping to succeed her, State Senator Kwame Raoul and Erica Harold. We're following the ballot order in Champaign County, so first we'll hear from Senator Raoul. He's represented Illinois' 13th Senate District since 2004. It stretches from Chicago's near north side, south to the Indiana border along the lake. He's also a former prosecutor for Cook County. Senator Raoul, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So if elected Attorney General, what would be your top three priorities?
Well, I think one is an all-encompassing priority. I think attorneys general collectively are the last line of defense against some offensive policies that have been proposed at the federal level, including separating kids from parents, an attack on our health care coverage, attack on a woman's right to reproductive health care, rollbacks on the environment, attempts to allow the mass dissemination of blueprints for undetectable 3D weapons that could be brought into schools, airports, and government buildings. On a broad range of issues, attorneys general are the last line of defense. Secondly, I sponsored legislation years ago to create the public access counselor within the Attorney General's office to allow for more transparency in government, both at the local level and at the state level. And I think it's important that the public access counselor be appropriately resourced to create that transparency, because I believe that the greatest deterrence to public corruption is sunshine, as Justice Brandeis once said. Finally, it would be protection of kids and consumers at large. We have to keep up with technology. The Attorney General's office is charged with being the head of the Internet Crimes Against Children's Task Force. We think about kids being safe in our homes when they're on the computer, on the handhelds, or on video games. But the FBI has issued warnings about child predators going after kids, posing as kids on video games and communicating to our kids, getting private information about their parents, about where they live, where they go to school, and where they hang out. And I think it's important that the Attorney General serves as a leadership role that, to make sure that law enforcement has the tools necessary to protect our kids.
I wanted to ask you on that transparency in the public access counselor. There was a ProPublica Illinois analysis recently of nearly 30,000 Freedom of Information appeals that found that government bodies around the state routinely ignore these requests. Current Attorney General Lisa Madigan's office has been criticized for how slowly it has responded to this. How would you have handled that?
I can't pile on to the criticism. You know, one thing that I do know is since we created the Public Access Counselor's Office, the volume of complaints about FOIA rejections or Open Meeting Act rejections has incrementally grown. So I can't say that, you know, one could have anticipated the volume to be what it is. What I can say is that it is there, and we have to do something about it, and we have to make sure we invest resources to make sure that the staff is adequate to deal with these claims. Secondly, the Attorney General's office has to be proactive in dealing with municipal governmental bodies as well as state agencies to make sure that they're exercising good practices so that there won't be claims in the first place made to the public access counselor.
We just have a few minutes left. My guest is Senator Kwame Raoul. I'm hoping we can get to a couple more of these. I just wanted to ask you very quickly about stories we've heard about sexual abuse in the Catholic Church, especially by members of the clergy, what we've heard this year. What role you think the Illinois Attorney General's office should play in addressing this problem?
Well, fortunately, Attorney General Lisa Madigan has initiated investigation, and I think it's an important role for the Attorney General to play. It doesn't just lie with the Catholic Church, though. I mean, we've seen in the Chicago public schools, for example, a wide range of abuse of our kids in places where they expect to be safe, that their families expect them to be safe, and that's intolerable wherever it happens.
Can I ask you one last question? Could you tell us a personal story about yourself that's something that's happened to you that's had a big influence on your life?
Yeah, certainly. You know, this November 6th marks Election Day for me, but November 6th was the day that I replaced Barack Obama 14 years ago, and more importantly, 15 years ago, it was the day that I lost my father to prostate cancer. Prostate cancer struck me 3 years ago, and fortunately, I was a beneficiary of early detection, and that's why my fight for access to health care is an important one for me, because my embracing preventative health care and my having the access to the coverage to do so allows me to be on the phone with you today.
That's State Senator Kwame Raoul, a former Cook County prosecutor and the Democratic nominee for Attorney General. Senator Raoul, thank you for being with us. Thank you for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Next up, Erica Harold is the Republican nominee for Attorney General. She's a lawyer based in Champaign, Urbana. She ran for Congress in 2014 and also serves on the Illinois Supreme Court Committee on Equality. Erica Harold, welcome back to the 21st.
Thanks for having me again.
If elected Attorney General, what would be your top three priorities?
One priority is to remove the politics from the office. I think the office needs to return to a watchdog role where you're trying to hold both parties accountable and to run it as an independent constitutional office that's free from partisan politics. Another priority is to fight public corruption and be able to hold both parties accountable. And I would do that both through using the statutory authority that the office already has, and also to advocate for the General Assembly to provide the Attorney General's office with additional investigative tools. Then there are legal reforms that I think need to be instituted, whether it's criminal justice reform, workers' compensation reform, but trying to institute legal reforms that create a fair playing field for all Illinoisans.
I wonder if you can give us a few more examples, because I know you've mentioned a few there just in terms of fighting public corruption. What do you think should be the number one thing you should do in terms of the first kind of steps you would take to fight public corruption?
One, there's the Public Access Bureau that's part of the Attorney General's office that's charged with enforcing compliance of the Freedom of Information Act and the Open Meetings Act. And that really helps citizens, media, and members of watchdog groups to prevent public corruption from occurring in the first place. It mandates that meetings of public bodies are held in accordance with the appropriate rules, that contracts and hiring and grant processes go through the proper protocol and notices given, so that citizens can weigh in at public meetings if necessary. That's an important part of preventing corruption from occurring in the first place. And then when there are allegations of misconduct that come within the jurisdiction of the Attorney General's office, the Attorney General should use the authority to conduct investigations and, if necessary, to refer the matter to the appropriate authorities.
Speaking of current Attorney General Lisa Madigan, she has joined other states in suing the Trump administration dozens of times since the president took office on a whole range of issues. If elected Attorney General, would you continue to sue the federal government at the same rate?
I would sue the federal government if there was a clear constitutional question at issue, if the federal government had exceeded the scope of its authority, and if it implicated interests of all Illinoisans. And so there certainly would be times that I would choose to sue the federal government. A specific incident or a specific example is the fact that the federal government was seeking to withhold funds from law enforcement communities throughout Illinois as a result of the federal government's disagreement with the Trust Act. I don't think there was a constitutional basis for their choice to do that, and it was appropriate for the Attorney General to institute that lawsuit to be able to get law enforcement communities the resources that they need. But I would never institute a lawsuit where there wasn't an opportunity to gain a real result for Illinoisans and when there wasn't a constitutional predicate giving rise to the lawsuit in the first place.
This past year, we've heard more stories about sexual abuse in the Catholic Church, especially by members of the clergy. What role do you think the Illinois Attorney General's office should play in addressing this problem?
I think the Attorney General's office should play a key role in trying to investigate allegations of misconduct. One of the things that would help the Attorney General to be more effective in doing that is if the General Assembly empowered the Attorney General's office with the ability to convene statewide grand juries and the ability to issue more subpoenas. We saw the Pennsylvania Attorney General be able to conduct a much more comprehensive statewide investigation because that Attorney General has additional tools. And that Attorney General was also able to set forth, based on the grand jury's recommendations, a series of protocol and best practices and needs for reform. And so from the Illinois Attorney General's perspective, it's important to find out the scope of potential abuse, but also to find out what kind of best practices can be implemented so that we can prevent these problems from occurring in the first place.
We just have a minute left, but I wanted to ask you one last question. I wonder if you would mind sharing a personal story about yourself, about something that's influenced your life.
One of the stories that has most influenced my life, when I was in high school, I was the victim of severe racial and sexual harassment. It started out with name-calling and teasing, escalated to vandalism of my family's home, and ultimately escalated to a death threat. And as a result of the school's inaction, I was forced to leave that high school. It was a time in my life when I felt profoundly marginalized, but it was also the experience that led me to want to become an attorney, because I wanted to acquire the skills not only to be an advocate for myself, but also to be an advocate for other people. And that's an experience that I will bring with me into the Attorney General's office as we're trying to figure out how best to address the issues of sexual harassment that is so pervasive within state government, and how to find ways to make sure that marginalized communities are included and have someone to advocate on their behalf.
Erica Harold is an attorney from Champaign-Urbana and the Republican nominee for Attorney General. Erica, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Finally, before we go, a week from today, millions of Americans will go to a polling place to cast their ballot, but millions of others have already done that. Early voting locations have been open all over the state, including your local county clerk's office. Voters have also been sending in their mail-in ballots ahead of time. And so far, the number of Illinoisans voting early is higher than it was at the same time before the last midterm election in 2014. Matt Dietrich is a spokesperson for the Illinois State Board of Elections. He's on the line from Springfield. Hi, Matt. Welcome back to the 21st.
Hi, Nyla. Good to be here.
So I mentioned that early voting numbers are higher than 2014, which was the last midterms. How much higher are they so far?
Well, as of Monday, we had just shy of 600,000 early votes cast, including voting by mail and also in-person early voting. We've got 600,000 so far, and that's increasing by about roughly 100,000 or so per day. In 2014, the last midterm, the total number of early votes cast was 791,000. So we should easily eclipse that mark.
And what do we know about the relationship between more early voting and higher overall turnout? Sometimes people confuse the two, right?
They do. And really, right now, if you go back and look historically at voter turnout, it does not change a whole lot. In presidential election years, we tend to have 70%. And in the midterms, we tend to have about 50%. I hear a lot of questions about, well, there's a lot of interest in this gubernatorial campaign. Is that going to drive the turnout up? And there really isn't historical evidence for that. You might recall back in 2014, that was a very hotly contested gubernatorial race, and we had just under 50% turnout. We had 49 point
something. I remember how low turnout was, yeah.
Does not really necessarily equate high early voting with high overall turnout. That could change, because it could be that, you know, this year there was a big push for mail-in voting. Could be that people find that that's more convenient, and now we are getting more registrations in general. 2 weeks ago, we went over the 8 million mark. We were just shy of that at the primary. So we've also got automatic voter registration going on now through the Secretary of State's office. We're seeing a little uptick there. Whether that translates into a bigger turnout, well, we just won't know until after the numbers are all counted.
Matt, one last question for you. We've seen so many reportings about different news reports about Russian meddling in our election. You were on earlier to talk about interference that happened previously in terms of hacking into the voter database. How secure are Illinois elections right now?
We think that Illinois elections are as secure as they possibly can be. We've done so much since the day database breach happened here in 2016, that virtually nothing about the way we handle data and store our voter registration data is the same as it was then. And we've gotten very proactive in terms of anticipating possible threats. We're involved in a couple of different information sharing national groups. And we've worked very closely with the Department of Homeland Security ever since 2016, really. And I think all election authorities across the country have been that way. And they've been very emphatic that we do need to watch out this year because, you know, they've said, they've been very explicit, and the Justice Department has handed down a couple of indictments that point directly to Russian interference in 2016. And the Department of Homeland Security has a division assigned to election security, and they've been very explicit with us that we need to be on the alert of, you know, nation-state actors who might try to disrupt things this time again.
That's Matt Dietrich. He is a spokesperson for the Illinois Board of Elections. Matt, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Nyla.
That does it for us today. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening.